the hit Paramount Plus original docuseries returns.
The last time I saw Max, he looked at us laughing, and then everything changed in a blink of an eye.
My feeling as a detective is that he was murdered.
Yahoo Entertainment calls it a spine-chilling docuseries showcasing real-life tragedies.
What about when your child who went missing?
We need to know the truth.
Never seen again. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
And welcome back to the First Cut Podcast here on CBS Sports. It was in the shadow of Lady Liberty. Patrick Reed, Captain America, got to celebrate his first win of this season. All the way now in the playoffs, Kyle, we got to get into Patrick Reed's win. We've got to get into a pretty like strong leaderboard at the top. Jordan Spieth living up to some of his weekend warrior reputation that we've pointed at so many times before. A lot to get into from this weekend, but as we sit here on Sunday evening, you know, do you think it was the Tiger Woods President's Cup dinner that really put the spark under Patrick Reed? Do we have to start drawing the fact that the President's Cup was at Liberty National? I mean, Patrick Reed winning this thing as we sit here now doesn't even feel like that much of a shock for a lot of reasons, including, as we've said on this podcast, him actually playing some better golf here in the last month and a half.
Yeah, he has been playing better golf. He did mention the whole like Statue of Liberty, Captain America, 2017 President's Cup thing after he won. And it's like, okay, like, wait, is that?
No,
is
you got to lean into it. Don't play too cool here. Don't play too cool. Lean into it, because in December, when this is going down in Melbourne, you're going to love it.
Yeah. I think what's also interesting, like, I think he said this to Amanda Balanis. He was like, it's been way too long since I won. And it's like, well, I mean, it's been 15 months. Is that like, my point being, like, I think he, and this has always been true, but like he continues to consider himself like the upper crust, right? Like he thinks that he should and will win like multiple times a year. And he comes in 47 strokes gained tee to green. So that's fine, but you're not going to, it's not like multiple wins a year. Now he finished fourth this week. And this was my point. I wrote about this. Like, If he's hitting it like he did this week, he's just hard to beat because he's so tough and like he won't do like dumb stuff and make a bunch of mistakes. He did early on Sunday, but he kind of righted things and rode it home. Did you see his shot? Did you see his tee shot on 18?
The tee shot on 18 I missed. I was with him like from 12 through 16. I missed, and then I tuned back in when he was already on the green on 18.
So it's just cutting like the helicopter tee shot on 18, and he was almost running after it. And CBS had Pro Tracer.
The Konica Swing Vision?
No, the Pro Tracer thing, but like what's the new name for it? It's embarrassing. Shot Tracer, whatever it's called.
Shot Tracker, Shot Tracer.
That might not be it. Anyway.
There was a conference call that you and I were probably both on where they introduced this technology, and we can't come up with it right now.
Yeah, hold on. I'll Google. It's Top Tracer.
Top Tracer.
There we go. God, I cover golf for a living. The Top Tracer had not, like, it was barely out of its apex, and he was like six steps off the tee box. Like he was running after it. And you know, in that moment, he's just like, I'm the best freaking player in the world, which I love. Like that, I mean, a lot of guys think that. He like really thinks it, and it's kind of great. So yeah, it was fun.
So here is my like big point with Patrick Reed is that we've seen it because basically during this drought, it has been kind of like a slide all the way back. He hasn't had the kind of finishes that he he likes. But in the last 6 weeks, we're talking a T5 at Rocket Mortgage, 10th at the Open, T12 at Memphis for the WGC, and then the win here. I mean, it's been like very much a late season push where I felt like we've kind of had him circled and been like, oh, Patrick Reed's kind of getting it together. Patrick Reed's kind of getting his game going. And what he said after the round to Amanda Baleonis was that he felt like the game has been there the entire time. The finishes haven't been there. Now, as you mentioned before, he's somebody with extreme and the utmost confidence in himself. So I ask you, Kyle, a much more non-biased observer, do you think the game has always been there, or what has turned for him such that somebody who was, you know, statistically ranking somewhere between, you know, 25 and 50, not being able to find those results? Like, do you think that things have tightened up or things have fallen into form such that he's found something late in the season?
No, the game hasn't been there. And, you know, I think one of the cool things about golf is, like, you can say whatever you want, but there's not a ton of places to hide because of the way the statistics are sort of structured. Like, you can like hide more, or you can justify more in like baseball or football or basketball just because of the stats. You can baseball maybe not, but basketball and football, it's like, oh, well, you know, I wasn't getting enough passes from the quarterback, right? I only got corner touches in basketball instead of like where I like it. There's just more justification there. But with golf and with baseball, especially with golf, it's like, well, okay, what was your, like, how close were you hitting it to the hole? Like, that's, you know, like, how, what was your strokes gained approach? And Sean Martin had a really good thing of, he kind of did his rolling strokes gained on approach shots. And since the Masters, it looked like a V. So it just gone straight down since the Masters and then straight back up to this week. And so there was a very clear, it wasn't like up and down, it was down and then up. And the up has been on the way up for a few months now. So, I mean, I think that, if people saw that tweet, that's, you know, clearly Patrick didn't see it, but that's kind of all you need to know.
So what about, all right, let's go into the back nine, because he did let it get a little bit loose early. All of a sudden we had about a four-way tie at one point, maybe even five-way. John Rahm had a piece of it. Abraham Ancer had a piece of it.
Sneds
had a shot at it, man. And then he put the, he put the ball in the water on what, six? Is that the par five?
Six is the par five, yeah.
Yeah, he puts the ball in the water on the par five, starts to let it slide a little bit. Where were some of your notes, not just about Reed, but kind of about the way the leaderboard was all jumbled up?
Well, I loved Reed on 14, the long par three, because and this is what happens when courses start to get fast and firm and bake out a little bit, is you see guys who are just not, they're not hitting it great, and they're sort of saving stuff around the greens and with their putter, they start to like fade away. And I thought he really shined over the last 12 holes when that started to be the case. And on 14, that's a tuck, it's like a back right pin, kind of tucked. And he hits a ball off the back slope and like feeds it back down to this like really tucked pin and makes an 8-footer. And you're just like, man, that's like being in control of your ball. And just like in a way that he hasn't been over the last year or so. So to me, that was, I don't know if that was the turning point, but that was one of the more impressive things that I saw from him, like down the stretch.
I feel like with Patrick Reed right now, there is like a little bit of him like being able to motivate himself as everybody else is just kind of enjoying themselves, right? Because we talked with Mark Immelman about the whole like festive atmosphere around the Northern Trust. And it, like, doesn't that almost make sense from a personality perspective that when everyone else is kind of enjoying themselves here in this moment, that Patrick Reed would be the one that is going to take it almost maybe not too seriously, but definitely more seriously than some of the other big dogs?
Yeah, totally. And I always go back to this hilarious, I think it was a tweet from Tron like four years ago. And it was, I've said this 100 times before, but it was he was talking about Rory and Reed. It might have been during the 16 Ryder Cup. I think about the 16 Ryder Cup all the time.
yes, callback.
It was Rory cares half as much and he's twice as good. And I just always thought that was like the best way to sort of describe the difference between Reed and Rory. But like in this type of situation, there's a reason that Reed has won this tournament before. You get to the playoffs and it's like, okay, we're all going to make a ton of money. Do we care? Yeah, but not really. I mean, kind of. And Reed's like cares, like he like really cares. And so whenever his game's good, it makes sense that he plays well at these tournaments, right?
Yes.
Because he's like all in a way that other guys they're just not. I mean, I hate to say that, but that's just kind of the reality of the situation.
What did you all right, before we get into Bryson, because there's a lot to get into there. Can we go specifically on Jordan? What was the final grade there?
I think I gave him an A, but like,
oh, that is on a curve.
He finished T6.
Yeah, I know what he finished, but that is like that giving Jordan Spieth an A is giving. Is giving the encouragement that you need to somebody who's like on their way back from an injury that they're starting to get their game back and he's not coming
what it feels like.
But he's not coming back from a physical injury. He's coming back from like a spiritual injury or something.
Here's the deal. So he goes 67, 64, 74, 67.
Yeah.
And I mean, we've kind of joked about this, but like he's wasting some all-time putting performances on like just like he should be winning tournaments when he's putting like he is. He gained 8.3 strokes with his putter this week.
The only thing that was a duck of what we've gotten used to from Jordan Spieth is the fact that he shot a 67 on Sunday.
Yeah, I agree. Because his Saturday Sunday scoring average has been just an abomination. But so I went back and looked. He has gained on average 1.5 strokes per round in a tournament 6 times this year with his putter. The tour leader, I can't remember who, it might be Troy Merritt, is not even at 1. And Spieth has 6 different occasions where he's done 1.5 per round with his putter. He's missed 2 of those cuts, and he doesn't have a win. And you're just like, he's gonna whenever the stats drop tomorrow, he's gonna be like 2nd in putting on the PGA Tour for the year, and he hasn't won. That is for somebody of his caliber and his pedigree. I mean, it's unacceptable. I mean, it's just bad. Like but it tells the story, right? It's emblematic of kind of the way his season has gone. And I mean, for our sake, I wish he was hitting it at all this year. And he was better in this tournament, especially the first 2 days. But then he kind of fell off a cliff on the weekend again.
Yeah, and it was right there, true to form. A guy named Adam Gold, who I do some work with, and you've been kind enough to jump on his radio show from time to time. I play golf with him too. Like that was all that we were talking about. Our whole conversation was like, oh yeah, cool. Oh, Jordan shot what? All right, cool. Talk to me on Saturday. Oh, Jordan shot what in the second round? Oh, all right. That was good that he got out there in the morning. Friday afternoon, no one seems to be going low, but we'll wait till Saturday because it's what? Top 10 in both Thursday and Friday scoring average, outside the 150 in both Saturday and Sunday scoring average. It is the strangest twist for the early career of someone who I consider to be a Hall of Fame player to have this be like, it's not even a final round or a final pairing kind of criticism. Yeah. It's just the weekend. You throw him into the weekend and things just fall apart. It is fascinating and so sad at the same time if you're rooting for Jordan Spieth's success.
Well, yeah, it's weird too because it has to be mental, right? It can't not be mental. So Thursday he's 17th in strokes gained tee to green. Friday he's 17th strokes gained tee to green. So you're like, okay, you know, is this coming together? Saturday 71st, shoots a 74. Sunday 66, and somehow shoots a 67. He finished 66 strokes gained tee to green and somehow shot a 60. He had 8 greens on Sunday, and shot a 67. He made 7 birdies, hit 8 greens. Probably because he gained 5.2 strokes with his putter.
Right. I mean, like the boy's not right. Like, he doesn't fall into a good statistical category.
No. It's been a weird year. And again, like, if you're putting, like, can you imagine if, like, Rory or Brooks was putting like this? I mean, those guys have been putting really well. I think Rory's like 35th or 45th or something in strokes gained putting. Can you imagine if he was fourth? If DJ was, well, DJ's a bad example because he's been putting it great. If, I don't know, who's another guy that, if JT was fourth? I mean, these guys would have like 6 wins. And Spieth is just, I don't know. It feels like a waste of a great putting season is kind of where I'm at.
If Brooks has Jordan's putting season, he's won all 4 majors.
Yeah, that's probably true.
If Brooks has Jordan Spieth's putter, he wins the Masters. He wins, obviously, the PGA. He wins the U.S. Open. He wins the Open.
Just the slam.
That's it.
Brooks is 59th in putting this year.
Yeah.
13th. Ninth tee to green.
And in Brooks's efforts that have come close but fallen short or just like not been there have almost always come down to like, do you feel like Brooks made a putt? I feel like I didn't see Brooks make a putt. You know, like there hasn't been at any point this season that Brooks Koepka, the player who I do think is going to win the FedEx Cup, the player who I do think is going to be the player of the year, like there has very rarely been a time where I felt like he was just rolling them in from all over the place, and yet we're still talking about the most dominant golfer in the game right now.
Didn't he make a bunch like on the back nine at Bethpage on Sunday?
You would remember that better than I would. I was tossing it. Yeah,
he made that one on, was it 10 for birdie? And you're like, well, this is a wrap. And then he had a couple bad holes in a row and he got tight with DJ. And then I feel like he made some on like, I don't know, the one on 18 was short. I'm trying to remember, maybe 15, 16.
But that was his win. The context was when he hasn't won, I felt like he has not made anything.
Yeah, and especially at the last 2 majors, right?
Right.
U.S. Open and the Open Championship, you're like, did you make anything?
Like you did. You played really well. Yeah, you played really well. You're right there. And I can go back and I can think about 5 or 6 birdie opportunities that you just didn't make.
So Koepka, strokes gained putting, Masters doesn't have stats, PGA... He gained 0.28 strokes per round, so it's okay. U.S. Open gained 0.12. St. Jude, he gained 2.3 per round, which is why he beat Rory by whatever, 5 in the final round. So, but yeah, he's got a lot of negative strokes gained tournaments. Mexico, Arnold Palmer. Canadian Open, Travelers, Northern Trust, which was obviously this week. So yeah, all that to say, like if here's 2 scenarios. If Koepka was putting it like Spieth, or if Webb had Koepka's driver, we would have had somebody would have won the Grand Slam this year. Webb would have won the Slam if he drove it like Koepka.
He would have had Augusta. And
he finished T5 at Augusta,
PGA, and the Open.
Yeah, I don't know what he did. I have no idea what he did at the other majors.
Coming up on the other side, we've been dangling it out there. We gotta give it to the people. It's the Slow Play Conversation. Next.
Check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss, 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
It's the NFL offseason, but on Pick Six, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, the football season never stops. Host Will Brinson, John Breach, and Tyler Sullivan are joined by analysts like Brady Quinn, Leslie Deuceable, Katie Mox, and RJ White to keep you in the loop on everything happening around the league. Whether it's free agents signing with new teams, the all-important NFL draft, or schedule release day, Pick Six has you covered. As the face of the league changes with every team move and player pickup this spring, Pick Six is a must listen. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and anywhere podcasts are found.
I wish I was there, Kyle, when Bryson DeChambeau goes up to Brooks Koepka's caddy and intimates that if Brooks Koepka has anything to say, come say it to Bryson's face. Kyle, I needed to be there.
I don't understand if you are Bryson and like all this stuff is going on and you're like at the center of it and your move is to like make a run at Koepka. Like, I think you're kind of overvaluing, like, how much leverage you have at that point, right? Like, well, I mean, I get, like, Koepka is...
Yeah, but are you like, surprised? Shouldn't Bryson...
No.
Like, of course Bryson DeChambeau has miscalculated his value in this debate.
But like... Yeah, I just like I don't know that
he ran the numbers in metric or with the Canadian dollar and everything's gone off kilter.
And I kind of get why you do it, right? Because like Koepka's kind of a power broker, at least right now.
Right.
You're like, if I can get Koepka, then so all of a sudden I've got a lot of like political capital, got a lot of power. But like, I don't know if that's the way you like go and do it. Like, hey, Ricky, where's Brooks at? I want to talk to him. Okay. Do you? Because I don't know that you do. I don't know. That was crazy. The whole thing was crazy. And the whole thing, you know, we're talking about this off the air, but like, it was fascinating because it blew up at this event in a way that it wouldn't have at a major, maybe at a regular event, but it just feels like this is everybody. It's the end of the year. Everybody's like tired and like kind of pissed and just like whatever. And so it's almost like this perfect situation for all of this to blow up. And you know, the perfect scenario too, like this clip of Bryson taking 140 seconds to read an 8-foot putt. And then missing it, which was great.
Whoa. With Justin Thomas in the background of the entire thing, doing the fake look at your watch and also the head in his hands as he's
the
like,
head in his hand. He was not pleased. And, you know, I got to give him credit. He handled it well afterwards. There was a quote on PGAtour.com where he said, look, I like Bryson, but man, he is really slow. And I think that's the way to go about it. Like, you don't need to like take shots at guys or whatever. Like, that's just the reality. And I totally get that from JT's perspective.
But so Brooks is coming in hot off this after the J.B. Holmes situation.
Well, and Brooks, remember this, Brooks called out Bryson. I don't know if he said his name, but it was very obvious at the beginning of the year after what did they both play Abu Dhabi?
Maybe.
I think it was Abu Dhabi or maybe Dubai. I can't remember, but they were both in the same tournament. And Brooks was like, it was kind of that Brooks like mini tour before the season where he like just started popping off on everything. And you're like, this is sick. Like this
this
is awesome.
Is awesome.
And
by the way, you know, there's no going back, right? We've reached that understanding. Like Brooks is out the gate, unleashed. We're not going to see him shut up again, right?
Well, yeah, and great.
Great. Because, like, yes, yeah, yeah, for sure. I'm with you there. But I think this is it. Like the old robot Brooks, like if you want to call him robot, then I think you are outdated. You're on the old season. You haven't caught up. You need to binge because where we're at now, he is not a robot.
Yeah, and I think there's a little bit of he's able to overplay his hand a little bit because he's won 4 majors in 3 years or 2 years. And so like, let's say if he goes on a Rory run where he doesn't win one for 5 years, maybe you have to pull it back a little bit, but right now that whatever doesn't matter. He's got all the freedom, but with the slow, I mean, there's which direction do you want to go with the slow play thing? Because like, there's so many different, did you read any of Bryson's transcript on Saturday night?
Was that a Saturday night transcript that were like, he basically took the conversation there, right? Like interrupts the question and then says, no, I want to jump out of this and address it.
24 questions and all 24 were about slow play.
Oh my gosh.
And he sounded like, here's my deal. And people on Twitter were kind of saying this to me and I'm sort of stealing the take, but like, I also believe it. There's nothing that he said had an ounce of humility about it at all. There was no ownership. There was no humility. There was none of that. And like, look, I understand what you're saying. I understand where you're coming from. His entire point is like, look at the entire round. How long did it take us to play? Not just single shots. Great. I get it. You're running to your next shot or whatever. Like, I think there's a conversation to be had there and there's a point to be made there. But can I get like just a little bit of humility about the whole deal? Like, he's like popping off about Steve Williams, like caddies slowing people down. And then he's going off about how like he averages 30 seconds. No, you don't, bro. Mm-hmm. Like, maybe in like the space time continuum that you live in, but like in reality, in like our world, that's not true.
He tried to claim that playing at his home course, he does it in 2.5 hours.
Great. That's like not, you're probably like playing with a cart and not putting everything out. Like, there's all these red herrings. If you read through the transcript, it's a fascinating transcript. People, it's on like, whatever the site is, ASAP Sports or whatever, and it's available to whoever wants to read it. But he's kind of all over the place, and you're like, well, what's your actual point here? And I think the PGA Tour actually made his point for him when they said, they come out with this deal on Sunday, and they said, look, like, we only penalize guys for taking over 40 seconds if they're out of position, if their group is out of position from where they're supposed to be on the course. So if they've fallen behind a hole or two holes or whatever. And so that kind of gives you a peek into the whole problem, is that like, if you're not out of position, then you can take as long as you want over a shot. So Bryson's kind of right in that, like, he can run, sprint up to his next shot, take 5 minutes to figure it out, and the PGA Tour doesn't care. And the PGA Tour is kind of like, they're kind of saying like, okay, maybe we should care. Now, do I think they're going to do anything? No, not really. But I do think that whole aspect of it is pretty fascinating.
Do you think that Bryson DeChambeau is one of the best golfers to have these kind of complaints levied against him, where like we have had, whether it was like Kevin Na with his issues, JB Holmes, as I mentioned before, there have been other golfers where pace of play has been an issue, but I would argue that these other golfers aren't like top 10 in the world rankings, top 10 in the President's Cup rankings.
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, Jason Day.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
Fair. Yeah, no, he's another part of that group for sure.
Yeah, he's up there. I mean, Bryson doesn't have a top 10 at a major. Don't forget that one. It's an interesting point. And, you know, I kind of fall back on Andy Johnson made this point, or he's made it several times. We've talked about it in person a lot, of like playing, like decision making is a skill. And it doesn't feel like it in golf because everything moves so slowly. But when you allow guys to take as much time as they want, it mitigates this skill that guys like Rory and Brooks and Fowler plays pretty fast. The skill that these guys have of like making complex decisions in a short amount of time. Like it's the same thing. I mean, it's the same concept for a quarterback, right? Like what is one of the best skills as a quarterback? Being able to make a decision like as fast as you can.
Sure.
And it's more elongated. It's more drawn out in golf, but it's the same concept. And when you allow guys to take as much time as they want, then it takes away from some of the best players. And that's why you see guys like Rory and Brooks frustrated about it and asking for change to happen. That's my question for you. Do you think anything comes of this, or is it all just this big charade in the playoffs and then we don't hear about it again?
Big charade in the playoffs. We don't hear about it again.
That's kind of what I feel like.
Yeah. My parents were just asking me at dinner earlier about whatever the latest brouhaha of the moment was. I said, all the people that are really orchestrating all the media storylines are actually on vacation right now. So don't pay attention to any of the media storylines.
Yeah, I just...
I mean, it is... There was an absence of drama. There was an absence of interest. Like things were struggling in terms of like really getting fired up about the conclusion of the Northern Trust. And that just kind of fell into golf's lap. And that was the story.
Yeah. And the one thing that's interesting, that's not a very PGA Tour move to drop that during a Sunday afternoon. That was pretty crazy. I mean, as crazy as it gets in golf, I guess. But I don't think much is gonna happen.
That's the other thing, is I don't think that PGA Tour has any loss by not doing anything. Like I don't think that there's any, like, no one's actually clamoring for any changes to be made, and the discussion and the debate and the character building and, you know, all those other things. Like that was the great point that we've talked about before, about whether it's any of these other events along the way. Like, they are entertainment events. If people want to see birdies, then like there's a reason for the event organizers to want to try and like feed the crowd something. And if there is an absence of good, interesting topics to discuss, pace of play is one that I think is like very relatable, in that it's not just the professionals, but it's something that all of your golf fans and many, or if not most, of golf fans are also, human beings who like to go out there and try and play around a golf and probably have those same either pace of play frustrations or takes or feelings. So I see no loss for golf in general for this to be a controversial and hot topic.
Did you see what Rory said about it?
I mean, I know that Rory plays as fast as anybody else. What did he say?
He said, we're not, he said something like, you have to start just handing out penalties. He said, we're not children. We don't need to be told 3 or 4 or 5 times to hurry up. I would maybe disagree with the first part of that.
About penalties?
No, about the children.
You're all children for sure.
Rory's not, but yeah. there are some out there.
Right.
The other part of this, Chip, that's interesting is this is a very, I think, unique problem for the PGA Tour in 2019 in a way that it wasn't in 1999 or 1979. Now, has slow play always been around? Yes. Tiger talked about that earlier in the week. It's always been an issue. But the problem now is that because so much of your content is broadcast, you don't like it. This stuff can't be covered up by the broadcast. Because normally, like on a CBS broadcast or an NBC broadcast, like or a Fox, whoever, it doesn't matter. They would just not show the 2 minute lead up to Bryson putting. They would just show him putting. And so, yeah, you might have 200 fans out there that are like, oh my gosh, this is the worst. But the PGA Tour doesn't care about the 200 fans that are watching. They care about the millions or whatever the number is that are watching on TV, right? That's the primary revenue stream that they're looking at.
I'm very glad you brought this up because the damning clips came from PGA Tour Live.
That's the point. The all access
coverage that they're offering, yes, and that they're trying to get you to pay $39.99 a month or like whatever it is right now, like that, whatever's auto billing on my credit card right now, they're trying to sell those. And what you're getting is him pacing off 70 yards by foot.
But here's what's even more interesting is the only people who are paying for PGA Tour Live are the lunatics that actually, like me, that actually do care about this stuff. And so you're in this weird scenario in which like you're sort of, by providing more content, you're almost like alienating your most rabid fans because of the way that content is presented. It's a presentation issue as much as anything. And so I don't know, like, I don't know that, I mean, the players are mad. Sure. Like I think that some of that blows over, the fan stuff. But I don't think anything's going to come of it. But I think even as they start thinking about like the future of like golf broadcasts and like distribution and all these different things, like this is one of the primary things that you're going to have to be thinking about.
I don't think anything.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. 100%. But I've always, as a matter of a consumer, both for work purposes, but even times where I'm not called into action, but you know, just want to watch so that I can, like not called into action on the writing side, but want to watch to prepare to, you know, be able to be a functional conversationalist here on the First Cut podcast with Kyle Porter. Like, I like getting everything. I like the fact that I'm catching the experience of somebody who maybe isn't inside the ropes, but certainly is outside the ropes, and being able to get that follow a group, the featured group coverage, the experience of that viewing experience that they offer, I think is awesome. And I hope that they don't take it away to protect the players from criticism of slow play, because Bryson DeChambeau for right now is certainly carrying a little bit of the responsibility of something that, as you mentioned before, and as Tiger Woods even mentioned, has been around for a long time. I hope that this doesn't turn into one of those situations, as it has before, where the tour decides to protect its players from criticism in some sort of shielding manner.
Do you feel bad for Bryson? Because no. I feel like I, huh?
No.
Yeah, I don't either. Like when you're doing like the you know, the load bearing, what is it? What was the phrase that he used? I don't even remember. But like you're talking all the, when your shtick is what it is. Again, like I go back to the humility thing. Like just give me something to like work with.
When he dropped the friction coefficient of the pin being left in, I think that was it.
Terminal velocity. Half this stuff is like not even correct, apparently. It's just like fancy words that, somebody tweeted this. Did you see this? He was asked like what the impetus for something was. I can't remember what the question was, but they said, what's the impetus for that? And he said, what? And they said, what's the impetus? And he goes, what does that mean? Somebody texted me and said, well, he wasn't an English major, that's for sure.
uh,
Oh my gosh.
But yeah, I don't know. And people were talking about this on Twitter, but like nobody like people holler about J.B. Holmes, but not in the same way. And you don't see players like piling on like they do with Bryson. I think that's pretty interesting.
President's Cup is going to be fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, who do you just bring Kevin Na on board and say, hey, you're used to slow play, go play with Bryson?
No, I mean, like, who do you put with him at this point?
Yeah, I by the way, did you, you probably didn't see this, but Rom putting out on 18 today. And some fan like yelled like while he was putting.
Oh no!
And he clapped back at him like after he made the putt. So what are you doing? He's like yelling at somebody like after he finished his round. And all I could think about was how like he is going to be put in prison during the 2024 Ryder Cup because it's at Bethpage and it is going to be psychotic. Like I don't even know if I want to go to it. It is going to be absolutely.
Hold on. All right, so 2020 is going to be where?
Whistling Straits.
Okay.
And then 22 is Rome, and then 24 is Bethpage.
Is Whistling Straits New York?
No, Whistling Straits is Wisconsin, Lake Michigan.
Mm. Okay.
And then, but yeah, and then Bethpage. Whistling Straits will be fine. The Wisconsin people are great. Just spotted. What's the beer? Spotted Cow, Speckled Cow. I should probably know that, but Bethpage is not going to be great. It's going to be it's going to be a disaster. I'm already terrified of what is going to happen to Jon Rahm during the 24 Ryder Cup.
I'm not afraid of what's going to happen to my big booty Spaniard. He's going to be okay. I'm more terrified about the patrons that he's going to take out. he's got a really strong low center of gravity. He doesn't get tipped over easily.
Should we talk about the guy who withdrew on Friday?
Have you not? Yeah, absolutely.
It's Spotted Cow, by the way. Great beer. I'm gonna have some when I go next year. Tiger, WD, could not possibly care less.
Really?
Yeah, I'm just like, whatever, man. Like, go, just don't play. Like, why are you, like, what? And this is, I did this on HQ. This is my whole deal is like, why are you, like, are you going to grind through like four rounds at Medina to like try to get to East Lake and like sweat your butt off for 4 days? Like, what are you doing? I mean, here's the thing, and we buried this, and we did it on purpose, and I understand why we did it. But when he won Augusta, we're like, oh, he's going to play forever. He's going to play for 10 more years. And I did it, and you did it, and everybody did it. And there's just a couple articles that came out during the PGA Championship where doctors were interviewed. Tiger himself has said this, like, this surgery does not last that long. And you start getting arthritic conditions and you start like there's just the fallout from it is not as pretty as you want it to be, especially when you're swinging the club 100, you know, however many miles an hour, 130 miles an hour. And I just feel like we buried all of that because we wanted to believe that he was going to win four more majors after the Masters. But the reality is that it is probably closer to him being not a factor at some of these big time events than him winning more majors.
So second time that he's gotten a shout out. I hope we get to talk to him soon. Sean Martin dropped this one and it is increasingly sort of where I've landed on the Tiger Woods conversation. Every day that passes makes what he accomplished that much more impressive. And I don't think that was Sean's comment. And then as I elaborated on it later, it was the idea that we just don't have enough perspective now to realize the work that was done from the Valspar to the Open Championship to a 64 on Sunday at the PGA Championship, to winning at Eastlake, to finally like cresting all of it with a win at Augusta, like that window, I think that was what we get. Like, if you wanted Tiger to come back, if you wanted Tiger back, if you were doing the funny memes about like where we are on the Tiger back scale, like, I think we witnessed it. And I don't think that we're going to appreciate sort of all the twists and turns along the way with like a true understanding until we are further separated from it. And until we unfortunately do have to go through a lot of these stories and a lot of these conversations, which are the fact that the 43-year-old who's undergone multiple back and neck and knee and everything else procedures, like, his body is not going to be able to replicate this in a way where he's going to be able to compete at the highest level in the game of golf in 2019 and 2020.
But this is like college, right? Like, you're in college and you're like, oh, this is the best. I love this and I appreciate it and I don't ever want it to end. And then you get out of college and you're like, there's no way that I could have appreciated what I had in college until I'm 10 years down the road. Right? Like, perspective, like, you can't, by definition,
you're not going to be able to have perspective.
Yeah. Time has to have elapsed. And so with the Tiger thing, I genuinely think everybody's like trying to get their mind wrapped around like he won the Masters and it's like impossible to do. And so I totally agree with all of that. And the thing I don't want is to like do this like song and dance for the next 6 years. Cause like that's what we've been doing for the last six, which is kind of crazy. Like if that's what happens,
that's where we have to thank our Brooks based God.
But like,
no. I'm being serious. Like the only way that we can, like, the reason that the Tiger conversation continued is that we didn't have an alpha.
Yes, that's fair. But, and also because he's Tiger. But like, think about how crazy it would be if we did the injury song and dance for 6 years. He wins the Masters, and then we do it for six more years.
Yeah.
Like, how insane would that have been?
It was so funny because I did not know the story about the storms at Liberty National that kept the gallery from being out on number 10. I woke up on Thursday morning. I was just going to check in. I knew Tiger was going off early. I saw that photo of him teeing off on number 10 with no one else around. I didn't think anything was wrong. I was about to send it to you in a text and be like, see, Tiger's normalized.
I mean, he could be in a wheelchair and there'd be like 50,000 people out there.
Maybe, but maybe not. Like, you know, I think that when Tiger suits up, I'm back to where we were not that long ago. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe a couple birdies, probably a couple bogeys. We'll see.
That's one of my favorite things. We have this thing where it's everybody at, everybody gets worked up about it, and we always ask each other, oh, how do you think Tiger's going to do this week? Okay, last thing for me. Call your shot. Who wins the FedEx Cup?
Brooks.
I'll go Patty.
No way.
It feels like.
It does.
So here's the thing.
I was in on the Justin Thomas theory, and I liked what I saw from JT, but he just doesn't have that extra gear right now.
In six of the last seven seasons, one guy has won at least two playoff events. And more often than not, that guy has also gone on to win the FedEx Cup. Feels a little like Reed could do that.
My theory is that after this, Brooks does a decent enough job to put himself, let's say, in the top five. Like, he's number one with the 200-point lead going into event number two of three. I think that do you remember at the PGA? I mean, Brooks shot a 63 on Thursday, right? And just defended it.
Yeah.
No, that's the way that I've played this out in my head. Brooks is up there at the start of the Tour Championship between 9 and 11 under, and then he fires a 63 on Thursday and defends it.
So he would, at the end of Thursday's round, he would be like 18 under.
Yeah.
After round one.
Yeah. And he says, come get me.
How funny is that going to be? He shoots 63 in round one and he's 18 under.
And he just says, come get me. And he's just like, all right, cool. Like I'm going to go fire three straight 70s and win this.
Dude,
thing.
I can't wait until. I'm so fired up for the Thursday of the Tour Championship because of how absurd the scoring is going to be.
All right, we're at minute 49. It's just fans here. I'm out on this new format. I didn't know how I was going to feel. We had a lot of jokes about it. You know, we thought it was kind of funny and cute when it was introduced. We are here in the moment, one playoff event in. I am out. I am not a fan.
It's I am a fan just because I'm just rooting for the charade of it all. I mean, it's hilarious.
When they had the on-screen graphic of like what your Tour Championship score would be based on where you are, no, out.
I mean,
out.
Yeah, it's just gonna. I think it's great because it's gonna be hilarious, and it's almost like it's sort of emblematic of the whole playoffs, right? Of just like it's sort of just this big staged show, and like what better way to end it than with this fake scoring system that affects the tournament.
Who won the modified Stableford Barracuda this year? Was it Colin Morikawa?
Yeah, Morikawa did.
Yeah. Yeah, I would rather have Barracuda championship scoring.
Just go Stableford?
Yeah.
But you start with, like, Brooks starts with, like, 8 points or something?
No, I mean, I would rather have Xander Schauffele winning the Tour Championship and Rory winning. Wasn't Rory? That won at the FedEx Cup that year?
It was JT. They should.
I would rather have Tiger Woods win the Tour Championship and Justin Rose win the FedEx Cup. I don't care that much about having my East Lake winner be the FedEx Cup winner.
They should just, did you see what Rory said about the new thing? He's like, well, it makes it easier for Steve Sands or something like that. Which I thought was hilarious. You don't have to be there standing there with the whiteboard, like doing math problems, like, you know, down the stretch. But yeah, they should just like not even tell us the format and just be like, well, Patrick Cantlay won. And you're like, well, what was the score? Well, he just won. Like he just gets the 15 mil.
And that was the other thing is we're also packaging this new scoring format into like, and it was 10 million and now it's 15 million.
Yeah, and it's like, well, okay, what does that mean?
Which again goes back to my initial prediction that my initial prediction is that Brooks is just going to go drop a 63 on Thursday at East Lake and say, "Come catch me."
Yeah, 18 under after one round,
like,
it'd be awesome.
Like, oh, 15 million's on the line. Good. I've been in the gym all morning. Like. Who do you think is going to win the whole thing, the FedEx Cup playoffs?
Reed. I think Reed is.
Man.
And I think he's going to like buy the Statue of Liberty with his money. He's going to buy like Delaware or something. I don't know.
The fans up here, they've been so great, you know, just from the entire time. You know, I just... It's the first time he's won in 16 months. Yes. And it's also the first time we've gotten a lot of these like on camera post round interviews. I'm ready for Patrick Reed to re-enter my life.
Yeah, I am too. Bryson can exit stage left and Reed can re-enter. That'd be perfect.
Maybe that'll be the podcast headline. Bryson exit stage left. Welcome, Patrick Reed.
I love it.
Love it. He is Kyle Porter. You can follow him on Twitter @KylePorterCBS. You can follow me @Chip_Patterson. Kyle, thank you very much.
Thanks, Chip.